This is the Saturday Night Live Friday Night Speaker Meeting held at Empresario Shopping Center, number 120 in San Jose, California, on April 24th, 1992. Tonight's 10-minute speaker is Junior R, and the main speaker is Pete Lee. The original recording and its copy are at the SML Tape Library. Please observe the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous and do not play this recording for commercial or entertainment purposes, and please do not break the anonymity of the speakers or any AA member at the public level. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Ginger. I'm an addict and an alcoholic. I want to especially thank Tony for asking me to do this meeting. I classify Saturday Night Live as my home group, and about 2 months ago, I mentioned to a friend of mine that I would really like the opportunity to do the Saturday Night Speaker Meeting before I move to Oregon. I'm moving up to Oregon a little after June 1st, and it just seemed, I guess, like I wanted you guys to get to know me just a little bit differently or a little bit better or whatever. And what I want to share right now is something that I found when I had about 4 months clean and sober. I'd gone on a cleaning rampage, and I dumped all of my purses and all of my drawers and everything in a sheet on my front room floor. And I came across these pieces of paper, and I wondered what in the hell they were. You know, and so I opened it up. And, you know, to set the scene, I was there in the apartment by myself. The kids were gone. My boyfriend was gone. The sun was just getting ready to go down. Didn't have any lights turned on or anything, and I started reading this. And what I came to find out as I read this, having no memory of it, was I wrote it in a blackout. And because of the reference to a period of time when my divorce came about, I know that I wrote this somewhere right around January of 1981. I didn't find the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous until March of 1982. So, this is it. When my divorce became final, I felt complete relaxation with my decision and still do, but the last 10 months have been a nightmare for other reasons. Vulnerability, loneliness, poor judgment in people, lovers, work, play, and drinking. Finances, loneliness, single parenthood, employment, health, love life, more loneliness, and depression. For whatever reason, probably because my subconscious knew that my conscious couldn't handle it, I wrote everything else almost completely in the third person. But I started it out with saying, you know, somewhere inside of me, there is still a person longing to be free. I just don't know her anymore. And alone in a crowd, and lonely in a crowd, and hold and be held, and need to be needed, and to give and learn to take, and to share. She would take courageous stands for those oppressed and would help those who were most in need of friendship. But recently, she's found herself in need. Those she helped aren't willing to return the favor. So she's grown bitter and hard of late, not trusting a soul. Her walls and barriers are safer. They won't hurt her or turn their backs on her. All she needs to do is build them a little higher and a little thicker. But then there are times when she feels out of complete control, going crazy for sure. Even a friend confirms it and agrees. But that friend can't handle it either and leaves her to her own, depressed and needing so desperately to be held by someone, anyone. She cries for help, but no one hears. Do they care? The only ones who do for sure are her children. They keep her going. Without her, where would they be? Look at what they're stuck with. One really fucked up mama. Is that any good for them? No, but at present it's the best that she can offer. God, it gets so lonely. She looks around her and sees no one she knows. She just thought she knew them at one time. Superficial relationships may offer her more at this time if she knows ahead of time that this is what they are. She's not happy with herself at present, but is working on it. She remembers a time when she thought that she was okay, really all right mentally, but she knows different now. Just how close is she to cracking? Who knows? But she's fighting it as best she can. Wouldn't that be the ultimate fuck-up after all? To allow it to happen now that things appear to be getting straightened out? No way will she give in. It just takes time and a lot of patience. Accept life for what it is and don't bargain for any more. If you do, you'll only be let down again. You know, it was 13 months before I made it into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and somewhere in my very, very first days, I read this, and when I came across this letter that I wrote to myself, it just kind of jumped out at me. And it comes from a vision for you in Chapter 11 of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it talks about people tolerating us less and less. And, you know, the more they turned their backs on us, the more we withdrew from society itself. And then the chilling vapor that was loneliness settled in. You know, I got chills up and down my spine when I read that because I thought, you know, somebody's been reading my mail again. And yet here I saw, in black and white, what was going on for me a long time before I ever made it into the program. You know, at that point in time, I didn't know that there was an answer. I didn't know that there was a solution. You know, the thing that... You know, there's a lot of newcomers in here. And I have to stress, you know, I did picture myself as dying before I came in here. I wanted to die. I only had one reason and one reason only for living. And that was my kids. You know, I had found alcohol, and then later on I found drugs so that I could drink more. I know the exact day that I became a daily drinker. I know the exact day I became a blackout drinker. I remember both of them real well. And the day that I became a daily drinker came off of a suicide attempt. You know, and a friend fixed me a great big tall Texas tumbler full of scotch. And all of a sudden I didn't want to die anymore. And I knew that I couldn't die yet because my kids were still little. You know, they were 10 years old at the time. And I didn't know what they'd do without me. And so for the next 2.5 years, I drank daily. Where that drinking spree took me was into judgment that was absolutely unbelievably poor. I ended up dating an arsonist who introduced me to some business associates of his who let me in on some information about some illegal actions that they had done. And as a result of that, a couple of attempts were made on my life. The second time that happened, my children were with me. And so I decided that I had to get out of Alabama, as if I needed a reason. But that's how I came out here to California. And I lasted from July the 11th of 1981 to March the 8th of 1982. Came to California, got introduced to a little white substance that spiraled me downward real quickly. It gave me the illusion that that I was okay. You know, one more time I was trying to find that magic something that was going to make me feel like I would be accepted by you guys. I shouldn't say by you guys when you were out there. But what practice told me was that every time the shit got down out there, everybody disappeared. And they kept disappearing and disappearing and disappearing till I didn't have anybody to call on anymore. You know, my very, very best friend, I embarrassed on a daily basis when we went out drinking. I terrified that woman. But see, we drank together, and we used together, and we needed each other because of that. And I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous off of a drunk. You know, I had one more blackout after going to a bar over in Santa Cruz, the Edgewater, okay? And I came out of my blackout, sitting cross-legged on my canopy bed, rolling a joint, sitting there talking to my best friend, telling her I was an alcoholic and I was going to go to AA the next day. And that's what I did. And I haven't had a drink since. You know, I had to go out and experiment with the chemicals one more time because I thought that they were just my friend and they made me feel good, and pity about you people that were addicts. Pity about you people that, you know, had a problem with those things. Until I went out and got loaded, and then I came back in with my tail between my legs, and I started getting active. You know, somewhere along the line when the rules for life and everything were given out, this alcoholic did not receive one. You know, I was motivated by self-will and anger and resentment and a whole lot of justified anger. and I came into the program and you guys took away my pacifier. And you told me, welcome to sobriety. And I became a raving lunatic. I thought I had a little problem with alcohol, thank you, but I was a very nice person other than that. You know, I had already been a Girl Scout leader, a Cub Scout den mother. I'd served on the PTA board numerous times. You know, by society standards, before I ever left my kid's father and divorced him, we'd met the magical requirements for success in society. We had a beautiful five-bedroom house in upper-middle-class suburbia, Huntsville, Alabama. You know, the kids went to the right school. I had a station wagon. He had a Honda Accord. We had two registered schnauzers. And, you know, where all that led me was a suicide attempt, for God's sakes. Because I didn't know how to live with me. Everything that was outside didn't make a difference. You know, and finally when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, all of a sudden I found other people who had going on between their ears at least some of what I had going on between mine. And they started talking about feelings. And they started talking about emotions. They started talking about fear. And I was the last person in the world who was going to let anybody know how scared I was. Because that was going to make me vulnerable. And it meant somebody was going to use me. They were going to step on me. They were going to take advantage of me. And then I walked in here and you guys said, trust me. That's like fat chance. No way. But I wanted you guys to trust me. I knew I was trustworthy, right? And, you know, God bless the program of Alcoholics Anonymous because you guys were real patient and tolerant with me. You know, as I was going on my rampages and my sprees and doing everything I could to get Santa Cruz AA to kick me out, you know, I would come dressed to meetings very provocatively. I would sit in the back taking everybody, well, I shouldn't say taking everybody's inventory, taking women's inventory. I became in a real, real angry person. And then you guys told me that all my anger was fear. We were back to that fear thing again. It's like, no, 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 you don't understand. I'm not afraid of anything. Then I started crying, just shy of a year sober. It's like I couldn't stop. You know, I cried and I cried and I cried and I cried, and I'd go into meetings and I'd cry. And people started looking at me and saying things like, my God, you know what, you might make it. And then they were saying things like, welcome to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they were saying it in a different way. They were saying, now you are dealing with reality. Now you are dealing with life. Now there is some hope for you. Because you're willing to look at these things that used to be your excuses for drinking and using. And God knows, I surrounded myself with people that gave me plenty of excuses. You know, and I had the jobs that gave me the excuses. And I drove the cars that gave me the excuses. My life was riddled with excuses for drinking and using. But see, the difference between when I was out drinking and using and when I came into the program was, out there, people ran when I was hurting. People ran when I was in pain. And what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous has given me is a few very, very cherished friendships. And those friendships are like nothing that I've ever experienced before in my life. Even when I'm angry, even when I try to turn my back on you guys, you don't let me do it. That's when you flock around me. You know, when I'm still my most vile, you know, and I come dressed all in black and strutting and just acting like I'm something that I'm not anymore, you guys just kind of look at me and laugh and go, oh God, here she goes again. You know, one more time, here she is. And see, a couple months ago, I wanted to drink worse than I've wanted to drink in 8 years. I mean, I wanted to drink. I sat out in this parking lot waiting for you guys to get out of Lucky's after a midnight meeting so that I could go in and buy my bottle. And it was pouring rain, and two members from this program, I sat in my car, and they stood out in the rain. And they stayed with me till 4:30 in the morning and walked me through one more night sober. You know, it's been interesting. Sometimes it's been real painful. But every person in this room is a success story today because you're here. And we all earned our own chairs. It doesn't matter where you came from or what's going on in your life today. You still don't have to drink and you still don't have to use. And you get to keep coming back to meetings as long as you want to keep coming back to meetings. And when you don't want to come to meetings is when you probably better get here quicker. That's been my own experience. You know, God's got a real strange sense of humor because he never told me when I grew up that I was going to be a member of this program. He never told me at 44 years of age that I was going to be making a radical change. But see, I've got one bonus going for me that I didn't have when I moved here to California. I've got AA to go with me up there now. And I've already been to meetings up there, so I know that they're there. You know, the only thing I can say is that I want to welcome the newcomers. I want to welcome the old-timers. You know, and the ones that are in between. Because each and every one of you is responsible for every day of sobriety that I've been able to put together. You know, and by the grace of God and this program and a whole lot of patience and tolerance from you guys, if I don't drink or use, the 29th of next month, I will finally have my 10 years. And that's... No, that's not yet. You know, and I know that's not yet. But I don't have any reason to believe today that I'll get drunk tonight when I leave this meeting. Because I don't have to go it alone. And neither do you. Thank you very much, Tony.
Hello, my name is Pete and I am an alcoholic. It's good to be here tonight. Yeah, it's good to be anywhere sober. I'm going to share a little bit of my experience, strength, and hope with what it was like, what happened, what it's like today. I grew up in a dysfunctional family. No one really talked about what their feelings were. It's in kindergarten. I already knew that I was having problems because a friend of mine... We're running around spitting water at each other around the fountain. And the teacher caught us, as any 5-year-old would get caught. Promptly wrote us a note and sent us down to the principal's office. The big 6th grader there that was acting secretary read the note, looked at the two of us, read the note again, looked down and said, "Which one of you?" I promptly pointed to the other guy and headed right out the door. I was already, trying to get out of whatever it was that I was in trouble for. It's a real honor to be back here because this is the group that I got sober at. And it's sometimes I feel like I got a mental block here. Because it's I come up here and this is where I learned about AA. This is where I learned how to stay sober one day at a time. And sometimes I think that, coming back to my old haunts, I don't have anything to say. And that's not the truth. The truth is that I do have something to say. And, it's shortly after that incident in kindergarten, I can remember my first drink, which, my parents drank red wine. I don't know if it was good red wine, because... I didn't know anything about red wine at that time. But I drank grape juice, which looked exactly like their red wine. And I thought someone had poured me a nice glass of grape juice and left it out on the counter out for me. So I went and took a big swig of this grape juice. Only it was a little extra stuff in the grape juice. I didn't like the flavor of it. I thought, why are they drinking this stuff? There's got to be something else to it. It's not because they like to drink this stuff that makes you gag. But it was... it gave me a nice warm feeling inside. After it went down. And it was... I just didn't feel the same. I didn't go running with alcohol right then, but it was... I made it through into high school before... I started drinking. Yeah, and when I drank, I didn't drink like normal people drink. Yeah, where they have a beer and they can leave it sit. Yeah, I don't understand having a beer. Yeah, I understand getting a six-pack and taking it with me, and if there's any friends, I ask them, what are they going to drink? Yeah, that's the kind of drinking I did. Yeah, it's when I was going to parties, my dad would give me a case of beer and say, go have a good time. Yeah, and he said, if you have any problems, give me a call. Don't drive home drunk. Yeah, but what's he doing at home? Yeah, I'm sure he had some beers of his own there. So it's, I always made it home. You know, it's, in high school, I'd go to the dances and I'd sit on the edge of the wall up here. And, I wouldn't talk to anybody. Yeah, I'd sit there and wish I was those popular ones out there, out dancing. Yeah. I was wishing that I could be like all the rest of the people. I'd sit back and, watch all the people have a good time. But as soon as I drank a few beers, I was one of those guys out there having a good time. Yeah, I didn't care if 12 people said no, they didn't want to dance with me. I'd ask until someone would. So that I could be part of. And that's what alcohol did for me at the beginning. It's made me a part of. It's, during that time, we were building a house. And my father's a real outgoing guy, and so he had all these people and friends come over and help us build the house. When it was all done, we had this nice housewarming party. And anyone that remotely helped was over there. And needless to say, I had a couple teachers that were willing to help us out with the house. And so in the process of me getting rip-roaring drunk, two of my teachers showed up at the house. Yeah, saw me hardly being able to stand up. Not knowing which direction it was. I barely even recognized who it was. And I was drinking out of those fancy glasses that you get from Taco Bell with a Tweety Bird on them. Yeah. Nothing but first class for me. Yeah, and it was, everyone laughed. Yeah, it's funny. He's drunk. Yeah. It's funny. Yeah, he's having a good time drinking alcohol. And, I wasn't getting in trouble for it. Yeah, I was still being able to drive home. I was still, showing up to school. Yeah, I was doing all the things that made me a good boy. Yeah. I made it out of high school and started working as a mechanic for a Chevrolet station. And I became assistant manager. And there was a liquor store right across the street. And I'd always be talking with the guys that were working at the liquor store. And whether or not it was just me talking with them or them just not thinking that anyone that was an assistant manager could be under 21, but all my booze was available there. I could go in and grab my bottle of vodka and plop it down on the counter and start talking to them about what's going on at the station or what's happening around. And he wouldn't think about asking me for the ID. Yeah, it was available. And, I was there quite regularly. I found a girlfriend that liked to drink. I'd buy her bottle of gin and I'd buy my bottle of vodka and I'd go over and see her. And then after she got off work, we'd go out and drink them. Yeah. We'd go park in some parking lot and, we'd drink down those bottles. Got stopped by the cops in the parking lot. And luckily we'd already thrown the bottles in the back of the truck. And he wanted to know what we were doing there. And came up with some kind of excuse. And through that, he said, okay, just don't cause any problems. During this time, I was also introduced to drugs. And I know this is an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and I'll refrain too much from talking about drugs, but that is part of my story. I was introduced to something called crank, and Crank allowed me to drink a whole bunch more. It allowed me to get promotions at work. It allowed me to stay up for 3 weeks at a time. Luckily, it allowed me to hit my bottom a lot faster so I can make it in here sooner. I'm a ripper and a runner, and that's the way it is. I haven't been fired from a job, but that's not because I didn't deserve it. It's because I always found another job before I was going to be asked to leave. I worked for my brother-in-law, in which he's an alcoholic, and he's now in this program. I always had an angle on something. I always had some way that I could get out of being one of the many. I wanted to either be better than everyone or not have to do anything. During this time, I took a test, worked for the city of San Jose. And I passed the test with flying colors. And a couple weeks before I wanted to get hired, I showed up there at 2:30 in the morning, trying to find out where I was going to go work. I walked directly into the police department's changing room, thinking it was a garage, because that's what it looked like, a big garage. I said, that's where I belong. I remembered to take the pot out of my pocket, but I didn't remember to take the 5 grams of crank out. But God was looking out after me. I went back there. I got ousted. They had me backed up against one of the cars. He wanted to know what I was doing there. Why I was there at 2:30 in the morning? I had no business being back in a secured area. He started making me empty out all my pockets. I'd empty out my top shirt pocket, and this pocket, my jacket pocket, my front right pocket, my rear pocket, my other rear pocket. And somehow he missed my left front pocket. And that was a pocket that had the 5 grams of crank in it. Don't ask me why. He made me go through everything else. Everything I had. But for some reason, he chose to not have me empty out my left front pocket. And God had some other things in mind for me. And I know that today. Even though I got written up for being there at 2:30 in the morning, they still hired me. And I began working on police cars. Don't ask me. I didn't write these rules. I just kept showing up. So I started working on the police cars. I'd go up on the roof where they park them all and sit in one and chop lines and start them up. After a while, I was going out drinking with some of the cops. And found out that cops aren't always as straight as cops should be. I started smoking pot with them. I've bought whites from them. I sold pot to them. I found out they're human beings just like us, except for when they go to a job, they can take us away in those nice handcuffs, those nice bracelets. It was just the insanity of there. The funny part was that everyone else had these light blue coveralls. They gave me some gray ones. I was the only one that had different colored coveralls. And it was the cops were always looking at me and going, "Are you supposed to be here?" I had to stay up for, as I said, 3 weeks at a time. End up having black circles halfway down my cheeks. Basic insanity. Seeing things that weren't there. Just like in kindergarten, I was always trying to get out of something. My mind let me do it a lot of the times. My boss ended up asking me to clean out this one storage area. It was where the canines units were kept, and it had the locker with or their freezers with all their beef in it. When they pull it out, all the blood would go all over the floor, so I got to use this nice acid cleaner to clean up all the floor. But in there was a bunch of plywood. And so I moved it all out and cleaned up the floor, and I was supposed to put it back. But when my boss asked me why I didn't put it back, the first thing came to mind was I didn't want the boards to work because the floor is still wet. It's not because I didn't want to put it. It's not because the floor was wet. It was just because Yeah, I wanted to get out of getting in trouble. Yeah, and that's the way my mind works. I don't want to be in trouble, no matter what. It's, after about a year of working on the police cars, I decided I didn't like working with those people. So I decided to go for a different job. And I went out on a different job, got promoted to a different position, and I got to have fun working with the sewers. Yeah, I got to become part of the Dipper Patrol. And it's I installed gauges for monitoring sewers. And, yeah, fun stuff. Yeah. It's during that time, I had my 9 months of clean and sober. I started going to church. And for some reason, I knew that if it was going to work, I couldn't drink or use drugs at all. Yeah, I had to have total abstinence. Yeah. I knew that I was not a person that could be moderate in their drinking. After 9 months, someone came around and said, let's go out and play some video games. So I went down to the bowling alley, started playing video games, and he bought 2 beers, handed it to me, and I was off again. Yeah, that's all it took. Yeah. My 9 months of staying dry was no defense against it. Yeah, it's, yeah. My best efforts didn't work. Yeah, so I was off running again. Yeah, it's, back into drinking on a daily basis, using drugs on a daily basis. And I finally hit bottom. I finally hit where, yeah, I couldn't take it anymore. Yeah, it hurt so bad that, yeah, I was either going to go insane, die, or get help. And on one of those clear, cold February nights where it's, yeah, just about freezing, the sky is real clear, I saw all the stars up there. And I looked up, and I said, God, I need help. I can't do it, God. Yeah, I need help. And that weekend, I called up my dad and said, can you come over and get me? And he came over and got me. And he drove me back to his house, put me to bed, and called up a friend of my mom's. And they took me to the Star Lodge, in which Jerry Williams, the man that was there, agreed to meet with me and talk with me. We sat down, and I looked at him. But the funny part was when we drove up there, it looked like they were going to take me in there, put me in a room, lock me up, and shut the door and throw away the key. I found out that that wasn't the case. They took me into his conference room, and we started talking. The first thing he said his name was Jerry and that he was an alcoholic. And it was like this big brick that was on my shoulder got knocked off. Yeah, just the feeling that someone else said that they were an alcoholic and admitted it. Yeah, hearing the truth just changed something. And he said that yeah, if I didn't want to drink, I never had to drink again. Yeah, that if I didn't want to. But that was the key thing, is whether or not I wanted to. He said that there was a group over in San Jose, actually Campbell at the time, said that it's full of young people, and that I could show up there and listen to what they had to say. And, yeah, that's all I had to do, was just show up. And so I showed up in this room, not this room, but this group over in Campbell. And I started out, pictures over there on the wall, right in the back by the fire extinguisher, hidden. And real scared. Yeah, I wasn't too tightly wrapped when I got here. Yeah, so when I heard the people say that they wanted to introduce anybody after with 30 days or less, I did it one time. I thought that's all I got. Yeah, by the time I had 6 months and understood that I could do it, yeah, I didn't need to stand up anymore. Yeah, so it's yeah, I wasn't too much together when I got here. And I heard all these people talking up there. Podium, saying that, keep coming back and don't take the first drink because that's what gets you drunk. Yeah, it's read the big book and work the steps. And so it's, I'm going, wow, they're getting real excited about this. going, if people can sell Amway and get excited, I think I can get excited about this too. Yeah. Yeah, if people can sell soap and get excited, I think I can get excited about my own life. Yeah. So it's I showed up and I started listening. And it's for anyone here that's a newcomer, yeah, I want to welcome you. Because if you have a problem with alcohol like I do, you're in the right place. It says in the big book that, yeah, we don't have the corner on the market, but we definitely have a program that works if you're willing to work it. Yeah, they told me to get a big book. And I was down at central office today, and I decided to get a big book. Yeah. Yes, and it's actually the big book. Yeah, it's I went in there to buy one of the small ones, and I saw this, and I said, I got to have it. Yeah, it's got big words in it. Yeah. And there's a lot of spaces between them, so I can read between the lines. But yeah, the truth is, I stop reading between the lines. Yeah, only thing I do is put some asterisks. Yeah, at the end of some lines, nice, some highlights. Yeah, and it's, tell you tonight, if I say it, test it. Yeah, see if it works for you, and if you like it, take it. It's yours. If I read it to you out of the book, you can believe it. Yeah, and if someone tells you it comes from the book, ask them what page it comes from. Read it yourself. Yeah, because that's what the program's all about, is what's in this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah, for the newcomers, here on the forward in the second edition on page XX, it gives us a percentage of people that can make it in here. But there's a qualification to it. It says, of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried. Yeah, I like those two words, really tried. Didn't say came in here and just sat down in a meeting. Didn't say come here and talk to people. It said really tried. That means you got to get in here and read this book. And you got to work what it says in the book. Says, I've really tried, 50% got sober at once. That's pretty good odds. And of the remaining, 25 sobered up after some relapses. And of the other 25% who stayed on with AA showed some improvement. Yeah, so it's, if you don't like the way things are going out there, yeah, it's, something's got to change. Yeah, and it's, when I got in here, my friends were saying, hey, you're going into that AA stuff and you're going to get brainwashed. Yeah. When I got here, my brain needed washing. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It was filled with all kinds of stuff that just didn't work. Yeah. It was filled with stuff that I could do things sane and rationally, you know, while I was drinking alcohol and using drugs. Yeah. It'd tell me all right. It was all right if I could steal if I didn't get caught. Yeah. Those are kind of messages my brain told me. Yeah, it's I was at a meeting the other day, and a lady was talking, saying that you know, she had two voices. One on this side would say one thing, and one on this side would say the other. And I wish I only had two voices. Yeah, it's I got about 30 in my head, all talking at once, telling me 30 different things, and I need to quiet them down because I need to drop the 18 inches from my brain down to my gut. Yeah, I find out that God talks to me in my gut. Yeah, yeah, it's God gave me a brain to use. And if I use it from listening from my gut first, it works. And it's coming in here, I definitely hit my bottom. And it's I hear some people that made it in here that didn't have a very bad bottom. And I hope that they have the what it takes to make it in this program. Yeah, because for me, it's my hard bottom made me not want to go out there. Yeah. Made me not want to go out and give it a second try. Yeah, it's, I haven't needed to do that today. Yeah, it's, I haven't needed to go out and do the scouting. I let the other people do that. Come back with the arrows and say that there's still Indians out there. Yeah, that alcoholism doesn't work. Yeah. That there hasn't been a solution. Yeah, it's, no one in here has to work the steps. Yeah, there's no AA police out here knocking on your door. All right, have you worked the steps yet? Yeah. And, yeah, with it, though, is you don't have to stay sober. Yeah. It, through working the steps, it, I stayed sober. Yeah. It's through showing up in rooms like these that I stayed sober, yeah, by listening to other alcoholics and also sharing up here, yeah, sharing what's going on. It's, I've done things in my life sober. Yeah, I lost my dad 5 years ago, and I didn't have to drink. Yeah, it's, I'm going through a divorce today, and I'm doing it sober. It's, AA will teach you how to do whatever you need to do and do it sober. Yeah, it'll teach you how to do it without taking a drink. Yeah, I thought there were a lot of places I couldn't go and things I couldn't do. My sponsor told me that, yeah, there's not a place in this earth that you can't go if you are in the right spiritual condition and you have the right motives for being there. And, yeah, I wanted to find out that for true. So I started reading the book, and it's in the book. It says that, yeah, we can go any place and do anything. Yeah, because today we have a choice. Today we can choose to drink or choose not to drink. Yeah, it's, yeah, I didn't get here because life was going so well. I didn't say, wow, it's exciting going out there and watching Laverne and Shirley. I think I'll go to an AA meeting. Yeah, I got here because it wasn't working out there. And this book has given me a reason, yeah, for my life to work. Yeah, it's given me a way that I can live my life. Yeah, when I was born, I didn't pop out with an instruction manual. Yeah, I didn't come here with knowing how to work my life. But through reading the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, my life works today. Yeah, it's in here it says there's two things you need to do to get sober. It's trust in God and clean house. It's I have to have a faith in something greater than myself. You have to have faith. When I came in here, I found myself a sponsor, one that was active in the program. And I've heard it today say that you need to get a sponsor that's fat. Yeah. One that's faithful, available, and teachable. Yeah. He's got to be faithful to the program that he's continuing to work. Available so that when I call him up that I can at least regularly get in touch with him. And he's also got to be teachable. He tells me he already knows it all. Yeah. He's a past right. Yeah. It's, I always want to stay green in this program. I always want to stay growing if there's something new to learn. Yeah, when I stop wanting to learn something in this program is when I start dying. It's a little over 2.5 years ago I moved over to Manteca. And, yeah, Lathrop. And it's, it was hard to get back into a new program. Yeah, meeting new friends. Yeah, and yeah, getting my fellowship. Yeah, so I showed up at one AA meeting, and for half the meeting, they were arguing whether or not it was all right to drink NyQuil if you have a cold. Yeah, and this guy had 12 or 14 years sobriety, or he said he had 12 or 14 years sobriety. Yeah, it's, for me, sobriety doesn't include NyQuil. Yeah, yeah, it doesn't include drinking Listerine or any of that fun stuff. Yeah, it's yeah, I have other ways to have fun today. Yeah, and there's other things I can do if I have a cold. Yeah. Number one is I can stay home in bed. And so it's it was hard to find my program over there. And I was introduced to a group called Back to Basics. And I liked the sound of it. And it was sounded like what I needed to do. Yeah, so I showed up at their doorstep and proceeded to get involved in their meeting. Yeah, it's it felt comfortable. It's important to find a meeting that you feel comfortable in. Yeah, if you need a meeting, go to any meeting at all, and I don't care how you feel. But if you want to find a home group, you need to definitely find a meeting you feel comfortable in. Yeah, one that you can live with, that you're going to show up. And I heard one guy ask his sponsor, how long do I have to go to meetings? And he told him, until you want to. And yeah. Yeah. As soon as you want to, then yeah, you don't have to worry about happening. Yeah, so it's I don't know about the rest of you, but it's, I seem to live on the AA block of my neighborhood. There must be at least 6 alcoholics in my 1-block period. Yeah, between stop sign to stop sign. Yeah, I thought I was moving in and no one would be in program and I'd have to find them. Yeah, I walked across the street. My neighbor's directly across the street's in the program. 2 doors down that way's in the program. About 8 doors down that way's got another guy. And then there's 2 ladies that live on the same side of my block. Yeah, so it's, yeah. I don't know how much more we can fit into this 1 block, but I can keep trying. If I get to do things in sobriety day, I get to go to Yosemite and be with 2,000 other alcoholics in November and show up and listen to speakers and get to participate. Get to go hike up with some of these other alcoholics up some of the waterfalls and see all the beautiful stuff. Yeah, I get to go to Monterey to conferences with other alcoholics that care about me and I care about them. It's coming in here, I found out that we aren't the only 12-step program. It was just the first. Yeah, we got started and then I think it was some 18 years later, Al-Anon got started. And they found out that it doesn't just work for alcoholics. Yeah, it works for compulsive overeaters, compulsive gamblers, compulsive debtors. Yeah, it's compulsive debtors. I'm wondering when they get well. Yeah, when they start paying back all the IOUs they put in the basket. Yeah, it's there are 2 other ones I thought might got started, but I don't think they'd have made it. Yeah, one is Liars Anonymous. Yeah, they would have never told where the meeting was. Yeah. And then Procrastinators Anonymous, but they would have never gotten around to getting the meeting started. Yeah, so it's, it's my mind starts working and it starts playing around up here. Yeah, so I don't know about anybody else's mind, but I definitely have an alcoholic mind that starts thinking. Yeah, I do a drive along the freeway and I read in nice two-inch high letters on the side of bridges, 10 feet, 3 inches. Yeah, 2 inches high on the side of the bridge. I'm thinking, what happens if a truck's driving along here, 10 feet, 10 inches? Yeah, is he going to slam on the brakes and lose 2 inches of tire so he can make it under the bridge? Yeah, it's, why don't they have a nice big signpost about a mile ahead so that people can find out about these bridges? Yeah, yeah. That's the kind of mind. Yeah, I start thinking. Yeah, it's we just had a vote for a non-smoking meeting at our group. Yes, I know. It was a big controversy. And needless to say, it lost. But, my mind starts thinking, okay, if all the non-smokers start sitting in the smoking side, then there won't be any room for the smokers, and so we'll have a non-smoking meeting. Yeah, but that's the stuff my mind starts playing with. Yeah. Yeah, I can come up with a rationalization for anything. It's, give me about 5 minutes and I'll give you a perfectly acceptable answer for whatever you want me to do. And have logic and reason and thought behind it. But when I start dropping that 18 inches, it doesn't have God behind it. And so it's for me, it's my faith in a higher power. It's with this program, I started getting a little complacency. And it's, I've been around the program for a while. Yeah, I can coast. Yeah, I don't need to read the book every day. I don't need to go to a meeting every day. Yeah, I don't need to call my sponsor on a regular basis. And I find out that when I do that, I start backsliding. And they call it relapse. Yeah, I didn't drink, but I didn't improve my spiritual condition. And for me, that's a relapse. It's, I was reading in another book. It says, I need to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. Yeah, it's... So it's... when I feel too comfortable, I need to have someone come there and pull my covers. Yeah, when I think that I'm coasting along, doing fine, I don't have anything to work on, I need someone to stir something up in me. Yeah. But also, on the other hand, when I see someone that's hurting, I need to be there. Yeah. I like this slogan. Yeah, I am responsible. When anyone, anywhere reaches out their hand for help, I want the hand of AA to be there. And for that, I'm responsible. And it's, I've gone and gotten a 12-step call. Yeah, a lady called up and asked to have someone come and talk to her. And I had to call at least 15 women before I could get one to go. And for me, that's not having a hand of AA always to be there. It's for me, I need to be responsible and show up. And when somebody's hurting, I need to do my best effort to comfort them. And it says in the big book, when all else fails, work with a newcomer. Because if you don't work with a newcomer will be working with you. You know, I don't know about you, but I drink alcoholically no matter what it is. Yeah. I don't know how to drink like a normal person. And, you know, I never let a beer get cold. You know, I've never let a soda get cold either. It's, those things don't change. Yeah, but what changes is what's in it. Yeah, it's... through this book, and through working with others, and through talking to my sponsor, my life's improved. Yeah, I can go through my divorce. Yeah, with sanity, I can have my wife get mad at me and not like what I'm doing. Or I can have my boss get mad at me today, and that'd be okay. That's heard one lady said that. The reason she got drunk was her washing machine broke down. I'm going, so what? Yeah, I'll wear dirty clothes. Yeah. Yeah. But it takes what it takes. And what it takes for me is keeping active in this program. Yeah, so I've now made a commitment to at least reading one page out of this big book a night. Yeah. I can read more if I want, but I have to at least read one page. And it takes a whole 2 minutes. Yeah, I sit there, the book's right next to my bed, and yeah, it's always open. And so I just start reading it. And it's funny, it seems like they keep rewriting the book, because I keep finding new stuff in it. And and here I start reading, and I could have sworn that what I just read wasn't in there the last time I read it. It says that God will constantly reveal more to you and to us. And so I got to continue to work the steps. It says the difference between the men and the boys is the men continue to work this program. You know, to continue to take 4 steps and to work on what God reveals. It's the other day I was driving down the street and this guy stopped me at the stop sign and asked me if I had jumper cables and if I could give him a jump. And it was easier for me to lie and tell him I didn't have jumper cables than to tell him the truth that I had them, but I was in a big hurry and I couldn't stop and help him. And it didn't feel good. It didn't feel good to lie to that guy. When I drove off, it was like something inside of me says that, yeah, I got to change that. Yeah. And so it's needless to say, I'm not perfect. Yeah, through this program is that it's okay not to be perfect today. In fact, I haven't gotten a memo from God saying that he wanted to go on vacation and left me in charge. Yeah. So that's I can leave God in charge today. And and that works okay for me. It's when I just do the footwork and let him have the outcome, my life works. It's in the morning I get up and I ask God for help. I say, help me do your will today. Yeah, so I do my own version of the 3rd step prayer. Yeah, for the first 6 months I got sober, I read it straight out of the book. And I needed to make it a little more personal. I needed to start talking to my God, God of my understanding. And for me today, my God of my understanding is personal. It's kind of like talking to my friend. And for me, God works in my life. It's As I was saying before, if I say something out up here, test it out and see if it works for you. If it works for you, great. If it doesn't, then try something else. And that's the way I found my program today, is that it's a one day at a time, testing one thing at a time. And quality doesn't come in an instant. And it's quality comes over time. Just because someone has time doesn't mean they have quality. It's a gentleman in the back of the room took me to a meeting and showed me that. He showed me men with 10 or 12 years sobriety that were sitting there angry, pounding on the table, saying, "I don't have to work the steps." And it made me glad that I didn't have to live that way today. Yeah, it made me glad that, I have a God in my life that works. And, it's working for me. It's our primary purpose here is to help the alcoholic that is still suffering. And so it's through that I keep showing up. Because if I don't keep showing up, I don't know if anyone else is going to. And I want someone to be here when the newcomer shows up through that door. Because the newcomer is the lifeblood of this program. It's without the newcomer, we just keep sitting around talking about our own stories rather than having someone to help. It's I was at the new meeting today, and they're talking about what length they would go to get sobriety. And they're going, "I'm sure glad that I didn't get sober back when this program first got started, because I don't think I have the time to go out and work with all those people in the hospitals." And I'm going, "Yeah, if that's what it took to get sober, then that's what I would have had to take." Yeah. But if it means that I need to go out and go sit in hospital rooms and talk to alcoholics to stay sober, then that's what I'm going to have to do. It's I'm grateful for these meetings that RAA has gone to. I'm glad that not everyone has to hit the same bottom anymore. Yeah, that you have to be in a hospital or institution or living out in the gutter to get this program. It's this program is for anyone who wants it. It's anyone who wants this program is here and available for you. So I'm going to leave you with this thought. If you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to keep getting what you're getting. So if you like what you're getting, keep doing it. But if you don't like what you're getting, think about working the steps and changing something. Thank you.